Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And it's time for...
Kevin! That's fun.
Kevin?
A lot of Kevins in the news. I mean, there's Kevin Falcon, and then I was watching this interview with Kevin Spacey on Piers Morgan last night, and he's trying to rebuild his brand. If you don't know Kevin Spacey, actor, but what was it? What happened in my brain? They look kind of like each other, actually. So they have the same first name, and they kind of look like each other. It's weird. Anyways, that's sort of
you know what they kind of do. I honest hand to God did not think of that before, but now as I'm picturing the two of them,
they do. But they both have brand issues. Clearly, we know Kevin Spacey, who's spending.
Think?
Who knows? You know, he's everywhere right now, trying to rebuild his brand. You know, he was never found guilty of anything, but he's totally canceled, and that's what he's talking about. So it's quite interesting to see a person try in the media to try rebuild their brand on that level. But Kevin Falcon, we have some brand issues, obviously, with his leadership here in BC, and can that brand before the election? Is it the Kevin Falcon brand the problem with BC United, or is it BC United?
Or a little column A, a little column B.
Maybe. I mean, obviously.
I just want to put some context to the Kevin Spacey, because House of Cards, you know, Kevin Spacey, much celebrated, award winning, and then multiple allegations of inappropriate behavior ranging all the way to sexual assault. He now has admitted to, as he put it, being handsy. Too handsy in the past. Okay. We talk about being canceled or not. I loved Kevin Spacey. Like, I was all in. I loved his movies. I mean, Kaiser Sose, come on. Usual Suspects, come on. Like, these are masterful performances. But he kind of goes into the ick category, because I do believe victims. And as you mentioned, he's never been found guilty of anything. But there's this... about it. It's like the spin that we're seeing in Hollywood for some. Oh, another one is Will Smith. The air if you're watching us.
Will Smith. Right? Will Smith, we all saw, though. He's guilty as charged because we saw it happen. But yeah, you're right. What happens when a brand is tarnished? Can it be reversed in people's minds? When you say this, you say, you know, all the issues aside, when you look at these personal brands, and obviously I do this for a living. Can you reverse a brand's image when it's tarnished, or just people just can't get behind it? In the case of, you know, Kevin Spacey, it's a whole thing. And then Woody Allen and all that. But then you look at, you know, Robert Downey Jr., who had the whole drug issue. And now people love Robert Downey Jr.
But he damaged himself, right? Like, there was no... There are tragic figures. I use Michael Jackson as an example of where there's smoke, there's fire, there's enough... When there's enough evidence, even that with enough money to kind of spin it, cover it up, change the narrative, whatever, hold it at bay. I still don't enjoy his music the way I once did, you know? And when I look, let's go back to politics and
how some associating anything.
Let's go back to politics.
Brand here and
brand wise. And I will take, this is not about an individual, but brand wise, when I open up the phone lines and we're talking about the BC Liberals, who changed their name to the BC United because their brand was so tarnished by some significant,
homophobic mostly, it seems. I was knocking on doors in 20, whatever year that was, 2020. And it was painful for me. I was knocking on doors with my friends who are gay. They were getting told that they were knocking on doors for a party that was, and you're like, I'm gay and I'm knocking on, like, sorry. And so, but it was there and it continued and it led, I think, that part, that homophobia and that all that stuff and some other weird things that obviously happened behind the scenes and this, you know, the conservatives and the BC Liberals, and there's definitely a difference between those two parties and the people who are in them. Although you can see what's happening now, that the wave of the conservatives is happening. So people are jumping on board that, but never mind that stuff.
There's brand confusion there. We've talked about that as well, right? Like, people jumping on board the BC conservatives aren't necessarily going, I really love John Rustad. They're like, I'm with Pierre Poilievre. and they don't realize that the conservative banner is not related, you know, and there's been much work and much spin done to put those two very closely together, and people thinking that they might hold their nose on the anti-science or the anti-LGBTQ2+ or whatever, and because they want fiscal conservatism, right? Not realizing that.
And the crime issue, obviously, and the cancel culture and all that stuff, they jump on
wokeism
that.
Is what you're looking
wokeism
for. Wokeism.
You know, there's a new movie coming out with Hugh, Amanda was telling me this morning, Hugh Bonneville, and I think it's about a news anchor who gets canceled for something he said a long time ago. And he's sort of saying, they're saying that was misogynist. He goes, that wasn't misogynist, it was sexist.
Just to be clear.
Be clear. It was okay back then. You know,
it's really quite something. The spin and the dig, like how far back in your life do you go to be held accountable? I mean, it's something as bizarre as I always knew I wanted to be in media. I always wanted to be a sportscaster on TV. I always wanted to be in media. I always wanted to be a broadcaster. It's what I always wanted to do. And so long before we all carried around, you know, cameras.
Yep.
There does not exist a photograph of me in the nude. There's no selfie that I sent to a boyfriend. There's no, because I just.
That's not a good idea.
So the reason I bring that up as a personal story is because when I look at some of the stupid stuff that people have done and then walk into public life and expect that to not count.
I know. It's like, well, when is really? The law of whatever the term is, you know, so there's this interest and times have changed a lot. So, and we were talking,
times have changed.
So how do you, when it was okay, 20, you know, you think about the way our parents used to talk and the things we used to say. And if I had been recorded saying those things in the early 1970s, that would totally cancel me now.
Eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Yeah. Exactly. One thing that, and I saw this TikTok yesterday about Justin Bieber. And I thought, and this is literally, I don't know how old he's, what, 30? I don't know. It's only like 10 years.
Yeah, I think he's 32.
So this is like 10, 12 years ago when he was like 17, 16, and he's winning all these awards. And there was women being creepy, slapping on the bum, like celebrity women slapping. Then there's, I guess, James Corden clip who's going, you smell really good, like super creepy stuff.
Yeah.
But it wasn't considered creepy then. And now it is because it is creepy. But how do we now hold them accountable for their creepiness from 12 years ago? Or are they, hopefully, as we all had become and progress, become more aware that this is creepy. Now, you can talk about, so you just can't get away with, as we get more and more refined as certainly as a society, and you could say, oh, it's wokeism, it's woke. You know, we're getting better as people. And yeah, the things I said 10 years ago or 20 years ago, absolutely probably wouldn't be acceptable now. I got in trouble with CKNW for saying the F word just in a staff meeting. And I'm like, huh? Because, you know, we're being around a long time. When you worked in a newsroom, the F word is pretty much, in my experience, the second word you use in every sentence. It's like, but not anymore. You can't say it anymore. So, and that's hard for me because I swear a lot.
Managed to go 30 whole minutes once a week with me without, sometimes we get the exploit. But isn't that interesting though? I like where you're going with that when it comes to the spin versus the woke, right? The silos that have been created now, because I do believe that we are moving forward. I'll use myself again as an example when it comes to pronouns, right? When I'm being an ally and I'm being a parent and there are young people coming in and out of my house, or I'm going to places and spaces where there is, you know, a they, them, she, they, you know, I literally say, I'm totally down with whatever you want. I'm going to make a mistake. I'm going to do it wrong. I'm going to reference you incorrectly. I'm just telling you that now. And 100% of the time, it's like, I expect you to be wrong. But you're trying, therefore. And that's where I'm like, okay, so I'm not canceled if I don't do it right. But there's going to be someone who looks at me and says, inevitably, there's going to be somebody who looks at me and says, if you can't get it right 100% of the time, you don't belong here. And
how many times on CKNW in those interviews when you've got the script and you've got it written in the script and the intro, right? But you're talking to the person, but they want to be referred to as they or whatever. And you're like, you feel so bad when you make the mistake because you kind of do. My kids always call me out on it. Like when I'll forget And they're very quick. They seem to have this ability to memorize all this stuff, all these pronouns,
because
right away.
Because it's normal for them.
Yeah, I know.
Right? So but that's like when we talk about our older generation. And heads up, I'm going to say a couple of inappropriate things in a row here, because these are things that I struggled with my 85-year-old stepdad, who passed away last summer. Right? He would say things. He would not use the term South Asian. He would use what would be a slur, or at the very least, he'd be like, "Oh yeah, well, you know, they're Indian." Right. Yeah. About the South Asian community, which I found confusing. And then I'd say, and also Indian is First Nations, Indigenous, Inuit. And he'd be like,
unless you live in America, where they say Indian.
Where they say Indian. And some bands here, some First Nations bands, want to be called Indian band. Like you, and you literally have to listen. I spent 20 minutes the other day. Brian was fishing up at Langara Lodge, and I took mom out for a beer at the pub, and she said, "Where's Brian?" And I said, "He's in Haida Gwaii." And she's like, "What's Haida Gwaii?" And I said, "Oh, it's the Queen Charlotte Islands." And she's like, "Well, why is it Haida Gwaii?" I'm like, "Well, that's what it was called before. And now, well, why didn't they just keep it Queen Charlotte's? Because everybody knows that." I'm like, "Well," and then
my
I
sister changed her name from Helen to Elizabeth. It took me 15 years to get used to it, but I can't remember ever calling her Helen. Now you got to just get used to that stuff,
you just
right?
You do. And that was the ending message. And also, as the younger person with the 80 plus people, my stepdad was like, he looked at me and goes, "I'm not changing." And I said, "Well, just know that every time you say it, I have to correct you, because you're saying it in front of my kid. And my kid needs to know that that's not what we do anymore." And that's the work, right? That's the work. And when somebody goes, "You're so woke," I'm like, "Okay, if that's what makes me woke." If trying to say they instead of she or he or whatever, because they're a they, or First Nations or South Asian, or, oh my God, I actually had this happen. They're Oriental.
Yeah.
I was like, really?
No, there's, I mean, it's generational.
Come on. Yeah, but you got to call it out every time.
Yeah. Anyway. Depends on how old they are. You know, I think that
no, it depends on the company that we're around. If it's just me and mom sitting there, well, not mom doesn't say those words, but if I was just around the elder who was saying it just to me, I know the difference. I don't need to fix it every time. But if it's in a group,
my mom would never call a place a mosque. It was a church. The church, that's not a church. That's what they call it. But you know, it's a church.
Place of worship.
Place of worship. Place of worship. All right.
Oh my gosh.
I got in a lot of trouble. Well, not trouble. I when I was in office, this is probably way back in like 2016, and I said to the vision people that I don't, you guys are so over the top, you know, and I sort of said the word woke. You guys are like woke crazy or something like that. And they of course, you know, went to town on me and looked up the dictionary definition of woke, which of course, if you look it up, it doesn't make any sense in the way it's being used. But that's the way I was using it, because the words evolve. And
woke has become a negative, for sure. It used to be, "I'm no longer asleep to the facts."
Yes. And that's kind of what I was saying. And I had to explain to them, you guys are not keeping in touch with what's going on. And it became a language debate, as opposed to
talking about the problem.
I was talking about something else, but now we're having a language debate. Okay. All right. That's city council for me. That's the way it would go.
Isn't that exhausting too, though, that we spend all of our time debating the words around the actual issue? Like, that's the thing that exhausts me about government, which is the spin, because they're like sparkly things. We can keep debating the thing that doesn't matter. We'll keep debating why we can't all see the intelligence report that claims that MPs were wittingly helping foreign actors. And we're going to keep going back and forth on why Elizabeth May did get the high level security clearance and that Pierre Poilievre refuses to, and it's because Pierre doesn't want to sign an NDA, but Elizabeth May did, and she was still able to talk enough about it to say what she, and then we're back and forth and that instead of solving the fact that somebody is telling, what did they tell? What did they tell the bad actor or the foreign actors? Yeah, what do they know? We're not talking about that, but we're not talking about that because we're too busy talking about the wedge issue, sparkly spin things.
Process. You know what debate? Right. You know what debate's not happening anymore is what? Public hearing debates in city council. Segway.
Nice segue. Let's go. Let's go there so we can build as big as we want.
I mean, basically in Vancouver, in most municipalities, now all municipalities, because the provincial rules changed. So now they're adopting the new regulations, the Vancouver Charter changed, the municipal charter is changing. So the Municipal Act. So then part of that thing is basically you get to build in certain areas without any kind of process, because building is the priority and cities are slowing things down too much. True, true, true. So it's the city of Vancouver is, you know, talking about this. What was it? And so basically a lot of the public hearing process per building is gone, which is something that actually Sam Sullivan used to talk a lot about way back in the day. And so some of the stuff that he, who, you know, was a BC Liberal, mayor of Vancouver, certainly wouldn't be aligned with the NDP, but a lot of the stuff that they've introduced are things that he used to talk about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Because the public hearing process is broken. But what's interesting is Adrienne Carr and how she's come out very, who's a Green Party councillor in Vancouver. I was there with her for 8 years. She was always very like, process, 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 public, public, public. Got to hear, hear, listen, listen, listen. Suddenly she's like, no, this is great. You know, this public hearing thing. Yeah. No, like we've got a community plans and we've got to stick to that. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is Adrienne Carr. So it's, you know, I just think it's interesting. She's getting a lot of heat for that, I'm sure, because the people in the city here who want process, and believe me, there's a lot of process, are really mad about this, that there's the process is taken away. And now towers will be popping up everywhere that you potentially, specifically, potentially wherever you live. And like right at my window here, as well, there's one right across the street, five times the size of what it could have been 2 years ago. Now it's
there are three in my neighborhood right now. Four within a 10 block radius that are big, tall, and being built. And you know what? 5 years ago when we started talking about this, I was like, why not gentle density? Why not peppered throughout? Why not lower and more lower instead of big? And now because it's been 5 years of nothing, I'm like, you know what? Too late. The crisis is here. Build, go.
Our kids got to live somewhere.
Go. People need to live somewhere. Yeah. People, I want my vibrant neighborhood back. My neighborhood is hollowed out.
Ask one thing I keep asking for, and I've been these micro suites and communal area. I've talked about this in the show before.
Yeah.
You know, why you and I have kids, if you can buy an apartment of 200 square feet for, you know, 1,200 square foot, so you can get it for $300,000, say, like crazy price, but and a communal kitchen or dining room, communal living area, like a campus.
Dorm. Like a dorm. Yeah. Like gauge towers. Yeah.
But your rent, your mortgage on $200,000, $300,000 is $1,500 a month. So can we not allow this stuff to get built so that our kids can get into the market? I know there's people, oh, rental and this and that. No, I want my kids to own their home and I want them to get it into the market. And the only way you can get into the market is you got to start small and then you build up your equity. And you can't do that on $1 million apartment. No, there's no way my kids can afford an apartment, but they could maybe find a $200,000 dorm room they'd be happy to live in that would be less than the bachelor or the basement suite they're living in Kits, which is $2,400.
That's unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And it's the public process piece that you and I have discussed many times, and you've taught me a lot about this, is if we're spending tens of millions of dollars on plans, community plans, city plan, the Broadway plan, the downtown plan, the east side plan, and then we're going to go back and look at those plans and say, this is what we planned on, this is what we voted on, this is what we're doing, and then now we have to revisit everything to make sure that this one building is what everybody wants, and then we're going to spend another couple of years doing that. Meanwhile, the cost of doing it goes up, the manpower isn't there. Everything trying to get built now. And what was the thing that we saw today about the added expense?
Burnaby. Yeah, Burnaby's trying to catch up to Vancouver. So this was Steve Suretsky, a local realtor. We talk a lot with him on CKNW.
Yeah.
He's really good, but he posted that the cost of building a building in a tower in Burnaby has gone up per unit by 30 grand. And then somebody else, if you follow his tweets, there's somebody who breaks it down. But basically, what was more concerning was the exact same thing I used to hear from Vision and the mayor and all those people when I was in council was that, well, that doesn't affect the price. You know, the costs from the city don't affect the bottom line price of a unit.
That's ludicrous. That's like saying fuel costs don't impact your produce. Yes, it does.
Of course it does. Well, what it does do, it stops, you know, a developer's a private, you know, business. They want to make money. If they can't make money, they don't build. So if the math doesn't make sense, they're not going to do it. Even that would be the best, you know, case scenario. If you can encourage a builder to, even with 30% of the cost being taxes, basically to the government, it's a miracle. What's interesting is that there seems to be no way away from this anymore. And cities, the reason that Burnaby and I think these other places are adding more of these costs, ironically, is because less things are getting built. They're making less money from developers because of CACs, community amenity contributions, or whatever your development cost levies. They make a lot of money off developers in the past. So when they build less, that revenue is less, obviously. And things aren't selling like they used to.
But the land transfer tax and all of that, all of those things are just not happening in a slower market because of interest rates. Like, it's all connected.
Why would you risk?
And then, oh, I'm not even sure if you saw this. I wanted to mention to you that this before we rolled tape here. I also saw that Vancouver City Council, I think yesterday, agreed in large numbers, if not unanimously, to make it that if you are fixing your home to the tune of $150,000 or more, you must replace your water heater to a new green standard. So now, I mean, think about how little in this day and age, how small a renovation is that hits 150 grand and just getting through permits and this and inspections and da, da, da. Okay, so now that extra suite that you were planning to put into your mortgage helper there, now you also have to redo it to have a water heater that is green. Like, it feels like a roadblock at a time where we need to remove the roadblocks. Like, we just need to stop adding reasons not to build the thing. Like, give us incentives to build the thing.
I you know, Elon Musk, I know you know, there's lots of controversy about Elon Musk. He laid off almost all the staff at Twitter, right? And Twitter's still running. I mean, you may not like it as much, but his theory, it's kind of a libertarian view, is that, you know, less is more. If you have more people working on something, they tend to just spend a lot of time spinning their wheels or meeting and talking and talking. That's kind of like government. I mean, how many more people do we need in planning? If we keep adding people in Vancouver to planning, lots more people, and yet things slow down? Why is that? How is that possible? How could it be slower?
You saw that about the budget too, hey? With the proposal to move some money around. No net increase to the 2024 budget, but Ken Sim wanting to move
for the mayor. Yeah, that's quite common. Actually, in capital budgets, it's really bad, and it often doesn't get reported. So we'll vote on the capital budget at election time, and on the back page, we've talked about this. You vote on, in the case of Vancouver, it's $400 million a year that we have budgeted, so over $1 billion, and it's defined very unclearly. But there are, in the budget conversations, in a deep way, they do have specifics of what you want to achieve over the next 4 years. But if it doesn't happen, there's an assumption that, okay, well, we have this $400 million set aside, but it's not real cash. It's often borrowed money. Let's move it somewhere else. Let's move that. Let's have a vote, which they can do. They don't have to have it like, my AG, if my strata wanted to take our capital thing and move it to a different line item, you have to have an SGM. You have to ask the entire membership ownership if this is okay. In Vancouver, nope, you could just do whatever you want and just have a vote of council and move hundreds of millions of dollars into some other project that wasn't agreed upon.
So why even bother putting it on the back of the ballot then? If we don't even have a public hearing on that, but we have a public hearing on whether or not that's an 8-story or 10-story building, but you can arbitrarily move massive amounts of money around. That's just spin.
We didn't even get, I don't know where we're at with Surrey police.
We got 7 minutes. Go.
Wrong. I guess I'm Go. Wrong. I'm wrong, Jody.
What's the date? What time is it?
Well, here's my spin on it.
01 on June.
It looks like Surrey's going
13th.
Going local. She's caved. She caved. So why? Why did she cave finally? Because of the ruling by the court, or is it because she's like, ugh, BC?
I think it's because the courts were so quick to say all of those no.
Yeah.
And the provincial government going, we changed the rules, man. Like, it's over. Yeah. It's like Ferris Bueller's credits at the end of the movie, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where he's like, comes out of the shower and he's like, are you still here? Go.
Yeah, that's right.
Go.
That's right. But here's the thing, though, and I've always argued this, is that there's another story at play that's hidden, that this is for her, this was a provincial play. That this was, and it certainly has helped, I think. And then there's a request by, I forget, Peter Milbar today asking, he wants to see how much, if there's polling happening by the provincial government right now in Surrey on this issue. And he thinks there is, he says.
Of course there is.
I want that information to be made public. Because of course, if only the NDP has access.
Why would they do that?
Oh, it's so bad that we're the taxpayers paying for polling that only the NDP is going to be privileged to.
That's not new, George.
I know, but here's my argument is what.
But don't argue that it's just the NDP that would do that, right? Like that everybody does.
I just want to know the poll.
And then they pick through the polling and they only put out the part that makes them look like it's working for them. That's spin.
But the damage is done, I guess, is my point to the NDP.
Oh, totally.
Damage is done.
Oh, no, to everybody. But I honestly, if you put Farnworth next. Sorry.
It's good for the Conservatives. Sorry, go ahead.
If you put Farnworth next to Brenda Locke and ask people who came out of this on top, it's not Brenda Locke.
I would argue differently.
I know, but I'm telling you, that's my opinion. And in all the radio that I've been doing and all of the calls that we don't screen out other people, it's just regular people, they are so done with that narrative of just digging in the heels, slow in the roll. You know, it's bad. Like, people are getting hurt and there's shootings and there's stabbings and those would have happened no matter what. But for there to be no defined law enforcement, you know, working together, working whatever, with like tens of millions of dollars being spent on nothingness, right? And there's the behind the spin. The RCMP and the Surrey Police Services don't get along. They don't. Right. They're not working together. Like in your head, you're thinking, why don't you just let these people work together? It's not how it works, unfortunately.
Because they both want the job. Yeah.
They both want the job, right? But that's also, I mean, take it off Surrey, and we had a guest on talking about. We had Wally Opal on last week talking about the Robert Picton history of Robert Picton, and how many more women died because the Chilliwack RCMP weren't talking to the VPD, and the silos still exist, right? And even between municipal police forces, those silos exist. So this isn't an RCMP problem or a municipal police. We have a broken system, but again, we spend so much time arguing about the stuff that doesn't matter. That, you know, who was there and who voted on what and when was Doug McCallum and how was da 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 and it was so and so and
bare minimum. She's covered her butt when the budget comes in and policing costs are $500 million, which they will
she
be.
She will not be reelected, George Affleck.
Oh, I think she will.
Let's mark this date where you said you were wrong.
I wouldn't be surprised if she runs for leadership of the BC United, if whatever amalgamation that happens, if there's ever a leadership next time, there'll be some interesting people coming out of the woodwork on the leadership, depending on what happens in October. If Kevin Falcon succeeds, which is still possible, we're a million years away from an election. Anything's possible, and we may be underestimating, like we did with Christy Clark in 2014. Was it 15?
The one I could kick a dog.
Yes,
he could kick a dog. Yeah, I think that was 16.
And then the weather vane ad came. That's the power of advertising. That weather vane ad, that changed everything. Everything. Yeah. So
movie trailer that I sent you I referenced last week, and then I sent it to you. Oh my god.
It's going to get something ugly and funny at the same time. The stuff that's going to be coming out when the writ is dropped, commercials, it's going to be so crazy negative.
Keith Baldry said that Kevin Falcon's line is mainstream, not extreme. He's going to paint the Conservatives as extremists.
So what does that tell you? This is not NDP or basically, they don't matter anymore. That's how the polling is looking to that. The NDP are basically toast.
And now I look at it totally differently. I think the NDP are actually going to win. And the only way that another gets even close to a piece of the pie is to decimate the other part of the right. The NDP are going at this. If the election were held today, the NDP would have a super majority.
I don't think so, but okay. You think so? I think the opposite. I think they will. I think the NDP, if the election were held today, would lose significant, and you'd have.
So Rob Shaw, Richard Zussman, Keith Baldry, all the people that I talked to on the radio last week disagree with you.
Did they also predict that the election,
if it was held today,
that that
if it was held that, today while those two are fighting,
Christy Clark would win in 2015. I think they did. They're not the best predictor.
You know what, George? I'm not here to fight with you. I'm here to tell you my opinion, and my opinion is that. And you've fought with me over Brenda Locke and SPS for 2 years. And today, on June the 13th at noon, you admitted you were wrong, like the Fonz. You were wrong.
Did I jump the shark today? Is that what happened?
You did. I have admitted being wrong. You did jump the shark today. I've admitted being wrong before, and maybe I'd be wrong again. But when the phones are ringing, when
Amanda's logging this too, by the way, she's like, George has admitted being wrong. That's a miracle.
I love it. No, but I think the ability to have this back and forth and differ in opinion and still enjoy each other and respect each other, I think that's super important. And if it was easy to predict, we wouldn't have this podcast. Because, I mean, up until the day the votes are cast, you don't know what's happening. You really don't. Because there were lots of people, and I think you included, that was like, no, Trump is going to beat Biden. Right,
this election,
last election, you said Trump is going to win again.
I don't remember that. I have to look back at the tapes on that one. I do think he will win this one.
Right,
unless he really fumbles, and or the right people show up and vote.
That's the thing. I think women are showing up.
That'll be key. That'll be key.
Yeah. Didn't mean to switch that completely, but. Until the, and like you said before, there's a long time between now and then.
Lifetime.
But when you've taught me the one thing, when you're talking about the other guy, you're losing. And both Rustad and Falcon are talking about the other guy while David Eby's talking about getting more money from the federal government to help with immigration issue because Quebec just got $750 million and BC got nothing. So,
you know how I talk about pavement politics sometimes, or we're here, win elections by buying, building roads or mm-hmm. canceling, bridge tolls. Yeah, that's how you win elections in BC. In Canada, you win elections by spending a lot of money in Quebec. That's how you win elections. If Trudeau could get the Quebec vote, enough of the Quebec vote in the next election,
he wins,
or he'll get a minority again. And as long as the NDP,
and the horseshoe, the golden horseshoe in Ontario, you got to win Quebec and the golden horseshoe in Ontario, period. And the Golden Horseshoe in Ontario have had about enough of the Doug Ford vibe, and Poilievre's very much mirroring that. And there might be people who are like, I'm going to hold my nose and vote for this guy again.
Wow.
Or Trudeau bails. Did you see that he said that he said on a podcast that he almost bailed when his marriage broke up?
Yeah.
Yeah, he almost stepped down. I know, right?
That's the worst thing about politics. It really is hard on your family. And people use that excuse to leave politics. And by family, you also have to include yourself in that you are part of the family as well. It's not a lot of fun being, I try to encourage people. I have a business that runs, that teaches people and encourages people to run for office. And I want good people to run for office, but there is also that warning that you have to have thick skin. You have to be prepared to, going back to what we talked about earlier at the beginning of the show. The amount of, you potentially, even for something you didn't say, could get canceled for something that didn't happen. It's like, that's how bad politics can get. They can, and now with AI, like, God knows.
Doesn't even need to be politics, dude. Like, every time we do this podcast, it's like, did I say something?
Right.
Amanda's I didn't. But Amanda used to sit in the room. We used to reference, like, oh, our
make sure I didn't say something. Yeah,
yeah, just making sure that George doesn't step in it. Anyways, you can find this guy on social media. Highly recommend that you follow at George_Affleck. I'm at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y. Y. There's mine. Joy. Jody with a Y. At Jody Vance on your social media. Now our likes are hidden, so make a point of liking and subscribing right here on unspunpodcast.com. That's it, George.
Bye-bye.